New Year. Good to see you all. I say this often, but I realize when I go, we go travel, it's doesn't seem like anything has happened for most of you, but we really do miss being with the family of God when we're gone. Just like you, we don't miss you if you're gone for a week. Necessarily. I mean, it's just the way, when we're here, we're doing what's normal. You just don't happen to be there, but for me, when I'm not there, it really does impact a lot. I'm sorry, I've got to milk this. There's one time in human history when 2020 vision is going to actually mean the year 2020 that you're living in. There's been lots of people for the last 10 or 20 years that have had a vision for 2020, but we get one shot, so I'm going to use it. I'm going to wear it out. I know it's cliche, but hopefully it will be memorable. We were traveling this last week. Our family celebrated Christmas celebration and gift exchange and all that over Thanksgiving, and so we were planning on a very relaxed, laid-back week between Christmas and New Year's, and our daughter in L.A. invited us out to help her with some projects, and which kind of blew up our plan for a nice chill time. And then something happened. I ended up getting sick and backache, and I got to tell you, I am just such a fickle person. I can get so discouraged so fast, and I was so encouraged by just the instruction to remember what God has done. Remember what God has done. How easy I can be convinced that God hates me. God is, you know, he's got his eyes closed and his finger on the pain button. And yet I have all this evidence, if I just stop and listen and pay attention, of his greatness and his goodness and activity. And L.A. in general, there's parts of California I could just love to just go hide and be, but they aren't the parts where there's people. You know, they're And Cindy and I, we can get a little bit of a grumbly spirit. And for a couple of things. First of all, it's just so overwhelming. So many people, so much lostness, so much people living for an empty, vain dream that most of them will never realize. And they'll live lives of disappointment and probably make all kinds of choices that they regret in pursuit of that. And a few, some micro percentage, will actually live that dream, but most won't. But it's just busy and noisy, and it feels like Tijuana most of the time. And I mean, it's just awful. Just an example. Our daughter lives in the valley, a valley girl. She lives in that valley, up in the hills that form the valley. And every house you drive by is minimum $1 million. You know, 400 square foot, nothing. It's $800,000. It's just very, very expensive. And just how tightly wound. You think, so many people move there because they want to. They want palm trees. They want to live in that environment. I go, why would you ever do that? It's just so busy and noisy, and everybody seems so angry and frustrated. We were just driving from our daughter's house to a hardware store, and I had some stuff in a car we were borrowing, and I was driving, and every house we were driving by was worth $2 million, easy. And that's not that big a house, but they were nice. It's the windy Hollywood places movie stars live. I mean, that's not mansions, but really nice houses. And I'm just driving, and I'm going, oh, is that my turn? And I start to turn. Oh, that's the wrong one. I pull back. Nobody around. There's this couple walking out for a walk. I was nowhere near them. It was from here. I didn't get any closer to them than I am to Rob back there in the back row with the car. It wasn't erratic. It was just kind of a slow, whoops, come back in. And this guy just goes off, just screaming and cursing. And I just wanted to stop. Dude, are you okay? You live in paradise, theoretically. I mean, you're here because you want to be. You're in this amazing neighborhood, in this amazing place. And the fact that I didn't do anything to hurt anyone just absolutely pushed you right over the edge. What is wrong? And I just kind of get that vibe. Now, if God called me there to minister to people, I would gladly do it. And it's kind of fun to mess with people in California when you actually stop and let them go first. They look at you like, what are you going to do to me? Why are you letting me go? What do you want? Because everybody just takes. Nobody's smiling. It's a really hard place for my spirit. And in that, I can get really discouraged and feel so overwhelmed. And some of that's my stuff that I feel more responsible than I should be. But we had an amazing time. And one of the things that's been really fun to see is how quickly and easily some of the tools we've been learning can apply to really good conversations. We were coming back to the airport after we were done heading back. We got a Lyft ride from around downtown L.A. down to LAX, and it was about 25, 30-minute Lyft drive. And a guy named Armand, who's from Armenia when he was 14, which was under Soviet control when he moved. Just fun hearing his story, hearing about his faith. Very proud of the fact that Armenia was the first Christian nation in the world that was officially recognized. I haven't checked all the history of that. It's a Gregorian version of something. But that was the first recognized Christian nation. And at the same time, while he was so proud of that and eager to that, he didn't know Christ. He had no concept of the person and work of Jesus. And so to have that conversation, how deceived. He was raised under Russian rule. There's an interesting fact. What he learned in high school, in his world history, World War II, the United States was not in World War II, the way Russia teaches the history. Isn't that crazy? I mean, he was sitting in class in California, and they go, and then in World War II, we were, you know, talking about how we conducted ourselves in World War II, and he's like, you guys weren't in World War II. I mean, he's like, you're a 14-year-old kid. What, are you crazy? Completely destroyed. It was just this propaganda, and it was just, so this heart for all the people around the world that maybe have a form of Christianity but don't know Christ. All the people around the world that are trapped in belief systems that just need light, just need the gospel, just need truth to shine in, whether we're in World War II or not. I'm pretty sure we were. I mean, I wasn't there. My dad was. He told me. I trust him. Yeah. I saw pictures with him and him dropping bombs. I'm thinking that was probably World War II. But our message is so important and how we conduct ourselves and are we thinking about how we're going to invest in this book, Oikonomics. Again, we're going to use this as a framework to have some discussions this weekend with men. But for all of you, I would encourage you to pick up a copy. It's a little cheaper on, even if you don't plan to be there. It's a really good framework, and I've thought about recommending it to a number of people. But as I think about what's coming, what's ahead of us, and how important it is to keep a focus and a refreshment, and there are those natural transitions, the beginning of things, and the beginning of a year is a normal time to kind of reassess and reevaluate. I think even the rhythms that God sets up for us in new days and new weeks, new years, new seasons, that give us an opportunity to kind of reorient some things. Now, we gather on the Lord's Day as a weekly reminder, a weekly rhythm, a weekly reset of, okay, who are we and whose are we? And we remember the foundation of our faith through communion and worship and addressing the scriptures. And each day his mercies are new, and there's multiple times maybe per day. And so those rhythms, but a good rhythm is to find some season. I don't care if it's January 1st. You know, appreciate Bryson's transparency about his lack of faithfulness with his resolution. I don't care if it's on January 1st. Do you want to be or do something different? Do you want to make an adjustment? Then the date doesn't matter. You don't have to start a diet on Mondays, and you don't have to start resolutions on January 1st. We can, but it's a good season. It's a good season. That's one of the reasons we want to be walking through this. So one of the things that I'm one of the passages. Some of you old great commissioners know there's a song out of the NAS based on Psalm 25. But I would just love for us as God's people to consider this passage today. And if you don't have a promise or something for this year, maybe pray through making this yours. This is just one I want to be mindful of this year. And it's kind of a dialogue with the psalmist. Who is the man who fears the Lord? He, God, will instruct him in the way he should choose. So the beginning of being led is to fear the Lord. And it is fear. It's a right, it's not just reverence, awe. It is a right understanding of his immensity and his bigness. It's real. God is God, and we to go into His presence with a sense of reverence and awe. He will instruct him in the way he should choose. His soul will abide in prosperity, and his descendants will inherit the land. His soul will abide. You see, what we want is we want our 401k to abide in prosperity. We want our checking account to abide in prosperity. And God's promise that somehow this place, this heart, mind, spirit part of us, soul part of us, he wants that to be prosperous. And his descendants to inherit the land. One of the things I've been thinking a lot about is spiritual descendants and the opportunity we have to bear spiritual fruit and to see spiritual babies born and grow up and mature to bear more fruit, and to which is fundamentally the Abrahamic promise. It wasn't his physical descendants; it was the people of faith. That was the idea. Now, obviously, it's great when our descendants inherit the land, but I'd rather have spiritual fruit. Hopefully my descendants will be spiritual fruit, but that's not the only descendants I have. And whether you have biological children or not, you can have descendants who will inherit the land. This promise can be for you. We can bear that fruit. The secret of the Lord is for those who fear him, and he will make them know his covenant. As we have that right orientation, he will reveal more and more of himself. My eyes are continually toward the Lord, for he will pluck my feet out of the net. So this orientation of waiting, of looking, of fearing, of honoring, really seeing him as valuable. So this book, Oikonomics, here's a copy of it. It's an opportunity to just think about the ways that we make strategic investments. Okay, so the concept is five capitals that we have. We have these capital is something that you can use or invest, right? So if you remember economics at all, there's a number of things that we have, and so we can choose to take what we possess and invest it in something to make a capital investment. And so the idea is that we have spiritual capital, relational, physical, creative, and financial. Okay, and I would add this one. I would make just as a possibility. I think he lumps it in time with the physical, but to me, it's a big enough deal that I prefer to think of it as a separate capital, because my physical capital is I just think of that as in a different way than it just gets too big when I think about strategic investments. Okay, so basically the big idea of this is it's just a framework for making strategic decisions. By the way, this guy's kind of radical, okay? If you understood how they live and what they're trying to accomplish in the world, you might think they're a little cult-like, because they really take seriously this idea of pursuing the Lord and being in community and investing in reaching the world. By the way, that's what a lot of the people we run in our circles, they would be considered pretty cult-like, because they really put that spiritual capital in that place. That's not normal for Western Christianity. It was very normal for New Testament Christianity, but it's not normal for Western Christianity. It's not safe. It's not reasonable. It's pretty all-encompassing. So the big idea is that's what it is. And so here it is. It's decide what is of highest value. Invest your other available resources to acquire it. And for those of you who are looking for tools to help kids make decisions or learn to be strategic planners, I wouldn't be opposed to giving this book and these ideas to someone who has no interest in the spiritual, making the spiritual the highest value. Because if they say it's financial, okay, well, then you need to rightly order these other things to make sure that you get what you want. If it's creative, if it's intellectual, whatever your highest value is, you need to think, how am I going to use these other opportunities I have to get the maximum return that I desire, okay? And this really, I think, is in keeping this idea of the spiritual as followers of Jesus. Jesus told the story of the pearl of great price. When you rightly see the value of what Jesus offers, then everything else becomes less significant, less valuable. That's your goal. And it, in our context, hopefully that is the spiritual relationship with God. But it may not be. But whatever it is, if you think about world-class athletes, they say they would shorten their life to win a gold medal. That's their pearl of great price. There's all kinds of people who trade family and marriages and relationships and reputation to make money. That's the great value. So human beings always figure out what the thing is. For some, it's just ease. It's just comfort. It's just finding an easy slot where I don't have to put much energy into anything. That's what I value more than anything. And that's what their life starts to look like. And everything else gets neglected. So it is a pretty good framework. I think one of the, I realize a number of you probably won't read this book. One of the most powerful things that I wanted to call out, which I think is a really good picture, because I think we can miss this in Christianity, the Western modern version, of what Jesus is really calling people to. When we read discipleship verses, we think it's about proving ourselves or proving ourselves worthy rather than placing a high value on him. Do you see that, the difference? Okay, if you really love me, you'll do this. Well, oh, if I really, I'll do that so that you'll be happy with me, or so that I'll measure up, or so that I'll stay secure. That gets really lost rather than going, no. He wants to be seen as the pearl of great price because he is, because it's accurate. He's not asking you to do something that's delusional or deceptive. He's saying, see me rightly and you will see that I am the pearl of great price. Nothing else you desire can compare to what you will get if you come with me. And so this metaphor, the rich young ruler, was, I think he did a really good job in the book. And I'm just going to read this little section of the book. So the wealthy young socialite decided to go meet this, and it's in modern language. There's a little bit of liberty here, but I think he catches the spirit. If you're familiar with, you know, telling the stories of Jesus in your own words, this is kind of how you would tell this story. So the wealthy young socialite decided to go meet this new philosopher and ask what he needed to do to get the good life. After attending an event in his city, he approached the new philosopher and, somewhat abashed, quietly asked his question. Hey, you seem to know a thing or two about the good life. Everyone thinks I have it all, but I'm pretty sure I don't have what you're talking about. What do I need to do to get it? The new philosopher replied, well, it seems like you already know it. Do what's expected of you, hold up your responsibilities, and be good to others. The socialite responded, that's what I already do. That's what I've always done. In fact, I've always done that. What am I missing? The new philosopher replied, ah, I get it. You really want to know. Here's the first step. Give up your old life, give all the money away, and come hang out with me. I'll show you. At that point, the philosopher turned his attention to someone else asking a question, and the socialite disappeared from view. I think this is an important part of understanding the pearl of great price. We do not possess it. It is something that is revealed as we follow, as we join ourselves, as we make those. It's not like you can read the stock portfolio of the pearl of great price and you buy it and you get it back. It is a journey of discovery that as you invest that which we possess, that God has granted to us, and place that at the highest value, it will become more and more valuable. Clear, its value will become more and more clear over time. Okay, so what if all five areas of capital were in complete harmony with God and his purpose? Would that be a good thing? Do you see it as a good thing? Do you see what God is promising at the ultimate good? If we will live our lives and we take these areas that we have to give, here's what, if God had his way, if everybody on the planet would live and invest rightly in the spiritual capital, we would experience this: God dwelling among his people and his people knowing him completely and cooperating with him fully. That's the journey of sanctification. That's the journey of connection. That's the journey of fellowship of the Spirit. That is the journey of being filled with all the fullness of God. So as we seek that, as we pursue that, if God has his way, again, ultimately, obviously we still live in a fallen world. But this is where it goes. God being experienced by his people. Relational. We would experience no more war or conflict between people. Instead, perfect relational harmony and peace, oneness. That's where this is all going. And so in this fallen place, we can live at peace. We can live in harmony. We can experience oneness. Now, others that are not yet yield to the rule and reign of Christ, they will not cooperate with that, and so there'll still be places like California. But but you can create your own slice of heaven, and you can be the one that brings peace and harmony and love and care, even when others around you are not in that place. As we invest our physical, eventually it's going to be no more death or sickness. Instead, perfect health for our bodies and our environment. As we manage according to Jesus' plan, we can maximize our opportunity to use our physical bodies for an eternal purpose. We can spend our lives, we can spend our energy, we can manage our bodies so that there's greater return in eternity. Intellectual, we would experience creativity and ideas abounding, all expressing love and care. If we were really in step with Jesus and we wanted his spiritual best, we would take what is going on in the world. We would see the challenges, the work to be done for the kingdom to expand and for good to be brought into the common good of human beings, common grace, participating in his common grace. And it would all express love and care. And it would work towards the others. Financial. Eventually, there's going to be no more poverty or lack of any kind, but abundance of everything needed for a full life. These are the promises of God for those who are participating in his spiritual kingdom advancement. It does not say you will have prosperity of bank account, but it says he will bless you so that you do not have need. Now, in American lifestyle, need versus what it takes to stay alive and from freezing to death are not the same thing, okay? So we may have to make some flesh adjustments to what it would look like if we really invested our financial well-being and our financial investment into the capital. I was just talking to a brother, and he's in actually Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and we were just talking, dreaming about some potential plans, and I was so encouraged. Guy's probably, I don't know, I know he's not 40, probably 35-ish years old, four kids, living in a foreign country. And we were just talking about the need for some cash to accomplish this thing. And he goes, yeah, you know what I've discovered is just, I'm pretty certain that if God's in it, he wants it to happen, I pretty much just don't worry about the money. It always shows up. It always shows up for what God wants us to do. So if this is of God, it can't be stopped. So refreshing. So it was a man who was living with his family in a financial investment towards the spiritual. Very, very encouraging. Okay. So where are we when we think about our personal condition, our family condition, cultural condition of church of the church in the United States? And I'm not going to give you answers to these things. We're next week, I was going to print them for this week, and I ran out of diligence. Just a little summary of kind of mega trends of deep thinkers. I think we could maybe get it into the newsletter this week as a digital thing, and then we'll have a few copies of paper. Next week we'll run it in the newsletter. But just people who study those things. So where are we? Our stewardship evaluation. As we think about how we're doing, what is our life counting for? How are we making those investments? Are they lining up with our pearl of great price? Is it accurate? That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying what your pearl of great price should be or needs to be. I'm just saying identify what it is and then make sure everything else is lined up to make that happen. That's what you're going to be accountable to. Not to somebody else's standard of what you should be doing. Are your choices reflecting that which you value most? Are your choices reflecting that? So as individuals and as the people of God, in our culture, in our families, wisdom. Do our lives reflect wisdom? Are we gaining access to more and more understanding of the things of God, the plan of God? Power. Do our lives demonstrate the presence of the power of God? Are we attached to him enough that his power flows through us in life and ministry? This is your promise as children of God, you know, is to have power, not to limp along, but to actually experience the power of God. And he's given us tools and resources to access that power, to does that mean you'll have everything you want in a Mercedes-Benz? No. I drove a Mercedes-Benz with lots of broken things. They break too. Mercedes-Benz break too. They're subject to entropy. They do. It was kind of a piece of junk. I'll take my Ford Ranger, Grand Bear. Do we experience power? Reputation. What's our reputation? Are we known for our good works? Are we known for loving our city? Are we known for our love for one another? Our righteousness? For our faithfulness, our time, the money, the mission that God has given his people? What is it? What do we need to do different? What levers do we want to slide? Are we known for our love? Connection to God and one another. Are we known for our love? Realize that's the only promise that accompanies a command. If we love one another, there's a promise that the world will know. It is our power of testimony, how well we do at that. Is that a part of our value system? Is that a part of how we make decisions? I just want you to be successful. I want you to get to the end of your life and go, I knew my pearl of great price, and I invested wisely towards it, and then I'm a happy camper. But I don't want anybody to miss that. Okay, so when we think about this big idea framework for strategic decision making, here's something I just want to remind us as we there's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot going on in our world. And they kind of overlap. And I just don't want anybody to miss the amazing opportunities that are right on our doorstep to connect to some really cool stuff that's happening around the world, around Colorado. There are conversations and opportunities. If you want to sow to understanding, obviously perspectives is a huge part of that, perspectives class. Jump on either or Jeff Sundell, Four Fields, No Place Left, any of those websites, and just listen to some of their podcasts. You want to give your kids vision? You want to help them understand why we're here and how to be equipped? You don't even have to be good at it. There are so many really simple people. They're not slick. They're not. They record podcasts and there's babies crying in the background. It is so earthy. They draw all their slick charts up with a pen on a whiteboard or in the dirt. This is so reproducible and so organic. And they're just lots and lots of dear, tender-hearted people who love Jesus. And lots of really smart people are watching, like No Place Left and other DMM and Discovery Bible Study and Church Planning Movements and T4T and all those guys and people who are studying such things. Really, we're on track. We're in place that there we could have every unreached, unengaged people group engaged by 2025. There could be a little outpost. That's the middle of the decade we are in now. Do you want to be a part of that? It doesn't mean Jesus is going to come back the day after that. I don't know if it'll happen in 2025. I'm just saying we're living in an age when the Great Commission, at least this verse, and the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, every ethne, and then the end will come. That has to happen first. If you're clinging, he's, oh, Jesus, please come back, just stop praying that. Because he's not coming back until this verse is complete. Whatever that looks like. I don't know exactly what it looks like. I just know it's not yet. Do you want to be a part of that? Would that be a cool thing to experience? I feel God is opening up these relationships and opportunities to connect with some of the most amazing faith-filled people who are on the front lines to encourage, to stimulate, to be trained by. And it's just, I was just listening. I wanted to play about 20 minutes of this podcast, but I figured the baby crying in the background would be too annoying, especially just listening to it. It is so cool to hear what God is doing. And I want you to understand how easy it is to look at the world and think God isn't doing anything, the job's too big. It will always be as it has always been. I am too weak, or I'm too afraid, or I'm too inadequate. And you listen and you watch and go, oh, King Jesus, can I play? Can I play? Can I play? I want in, man. I want to participate. What a glorious day. What a glorious opportunity to walk with the people of God. And there are things happening in the earth right now, places you never have been, never will be. If you went there, you would probably be killed if you spoke the name of Jesus. And there's stuff happening all over the world. Just one quick anecdote. I think it was 1999. Jeff was talking about just sharing his story of this rapidly expanding movement of God throughout the world. They could identify, I think, I'm gonna get it wrong. It was either 7 or 17 kind of fledging church planting movements. By 2014, there were 750 around the world, multi-generational. Some 17, 20 generations deep of church planting movements all over the world. Iran is going ballistic in the gospel. It's crazy what's happening. Crazy what's happening. And we've got a front row seat through relationships that God has granted us. By the way, all rooted in perspectives. Every connection we have goes back to what God has done historically in my life through perspectives. It's a gathering place of that kind of people. And it's pretty cool. So, do we want to be a part of that? Five years from now, would it be cool to say we participated? That we were vitally involved with what God was doing to complete the work? And most of you, I mean, you may make trips. We'll talk about some of those opportunities next week. But most of you aren't going to move internationally, but you can participate. And there's a tremendous tool. So when you think about the spiritual, different questions to ask than the norm. What is God doing and how is he asking me to join him? So often you go, God, do this for me, do that for me. I want this. Will you do it for me? Could we flavor that question as we think about our plans for this coming year? Maybe even the next decade. Maybe for the next decade, would we think about strategic planning for a five-year plan or a 10-year plan? What do we need to do this year so that something significant happens 10 years from now or 5 years from now? So that's a different question. What can I do to more fully experience his power and his presence? How can I learn to abide more, to be more connected to him? What do I need to do? What do I need to do with my prayer life? What do I need to do with my prayer life if I'm going to, is that just kind of duty thing or is that kind of optional? Yeah. Depends on your pearl of great price. It depends on your pearl of great price. What do we need to do relationally? With who and how should I build deeper connections and oneness with, that's not horrible grammar, sorry, to or fully display his desired oneness? What is my responsibility? What is my opportunity to participate in relationship in such a way that we are modeling and displaying oneness and exporting that? What investments can I make to grow in my relational skill and awareness? So that I can leverage quality friendships. Oops, that shouldn't be there. Okay, physical. How could I invest my time and energy to more completely? I'm gonna waive the time factor and just throw it in here into the physical, for today's purposes. How can I invest my time and energy to more completely be in step with kingdom purposes? What rhythms in my physical world need to be established to reflect kingdom centrality? What does my pace look like? What's not just allowable, what's optimum? See, we're conditioned in Western Christianity to think, what can't I do and what do I have to do? We don't think like entrepreneurs. We don't think like investors. What do I have to invest and how can I get the maximum return? That's a very different question. What do I have to do and what can't I do? Very, very different. What could I do with my loaves and fish to participate and make the kingdom more central? Intellectual. What should I watch, read, study in order to more fully know God's plans and purposes? Do you have a plan to even be stimulated by what God is doing? To even expose yourself When you have free time, do you think about plugging in a 10-minute podcast that will actually lift your eyes and see the harvest, or to be trained, or to be stimulated in some way? What skills should I develop to be more fully serve the kingdom? What is God asking me to grow in understanding? There's so many things that are needful. We'll talk more about those next week as well. There are so many things that are needed right now to participate as support structures to complete the work. Right now, I believe there are plenty of people that will go. There are not enough people who will send via giving them money so that they're fully funded and they don't have to buy their own bullets. And there's not enough support structures to help them be successful. There are plenty of people that will go. If money were not an issue and support were not an issue, there would be plenty of people who go, here I am, send me. They would not all be successful. Maybe all of them shouldn't go. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying there's plenty of people that if the resources were there and the support structures were there, the people would not be the issue, the going piece. Financial. Instead of how much does God want, how much does he require, how much do I need to keep, how much should I keep? You know, fundamentally, to see that happen, it will require us making some kind of investment. And we will have to decide, what's our pearl of great price? Is it the kingdom advancement? Is it the building up of the church? Is that going to be our pearl of great price? Because you've got lots of options where you spend your money, where you invest your money, where you give your money. But does it reflect God's heart for the nations? Will it give you the maximum benefit and return in that spiritual as you make those choices? Are there strategic investments of money that God would ask me to make? Are there things that he would want me to do? This is the Moravian question, is that first one. How much should I keep? How much do I need? How much do I need? When you think about money, most of us think, how much do I have and what am I going to spend it on? Some of us ask, how much do I have, how much is God's, and what am I going to spend the rest on? What I'm asking is, will we look at our money and go, this is God's money. He has a plan for how I live, where I live, what I do, every dollar is his. Every dollar is his. And he has a best plan for it. If I seek him and find his plan for it, I have a best opportunity. Do you have that sense from the Lord that you're making that investment in the way that will honor him and lead to your pearl of great price? That's just your conscience. God will take care of me. God will take care of this ministry. God will take care of the people in the field. God will take care of that which concerns him. Are you in the game? Are you rightly seeing those things? Do you see it as an investment for the kingdom? So just some different questions, maybe to wrestle with this week. Everyone, not just the men that plan to be there next Saturday. Friday and Saturday. I do think it is a really, really good opportunity, a pretty well-written book, a way of thinking about teaching us to think in terms of investments rather than just do's and don'ts and time management planning. Does that all make sense? So, again, are there more of these somewhere else? This is all we possess right now? Yeah, so we have four of them, looks like, right now. So four people can grab those if you'd like them. Okay, well, let me pray. Father, we are so grateful. And you are not asleep. You are clear. You are active. You're powerful. You're caring. You're engaged. You want the whole world to be reconciled. And you are working through your people by your Spirit to redeem and gather from every tribe and tongue and people and nation, people to worship you, and to gather around your throne and be your image bearers in community in a unique way and in every place on earth. God, we bless you for that. Thank you for opportunities we have to influence this city, this area. God, thank you for the tremendous opportunities we have to partner and to be a part of this great global move. God, if we tried to do what you're doing, Lord, we would be so overwhelmed. But you are doing it, and God, you're raising up men and women to complete your world kingdom establishment, God. We bless you for that. We want to see it. I want to see it. I want to participate. I want my life to count in a way that lets your kingdom and your glory be expanded, and my eternity to reflect that I invested well that which you've given me. Help us to be sober about these things. In Jesus' name, amen.